to Arsinoe's hands. How Arsinoe would like to tell her what Daphne said, if only to promise that they will find another way. But until she finds one, she thinks it is best not to. Have you seen Jules? Mirabella asks. Is she still... I crafted a tonic. A sedative. She's resting now. Good, Mirabella says. I knew she would be fine. She's not fine. She's not better. Arsinoe starts to cry again, and Mirabella pulls her close. I don't know what to do. Arsinoe gasps. She's not even Jules. Her eyes are full of blood. She doesn't even know me. Mirabella rocks her gently, and Arsinoe clings to her. Everything is going wrong, Mira, and I don't know what to do. No, 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 Amelia says to the people gathered in the street before the castle. Our Legion Queen is well. She was injured in the attack by Catarine the Undead, but only slightly. She is shut up now in grief for her mother, who was murdered by the Undead Queen herself. And what of the Elemental? The Naturalist? They have long been allies of Jewien Malone, but they have abdicated, and that abdication stands. Be patient, friends, and be ready. Continue your work. They have struck first blood, but we shall have answer for it soon enough. Mirabella watches from behind the cracked open door. When Amelia comes back inside, she jumps at the sight of her in the shadows. They strip us of our proper title, Mirabella says. The Elemental? The Naturalist? Do we not even have names anymore? No names that matter. No titles of importance. Isn't that the way you wanted it? Amelia stalks deeper into the fortress, her gait fast and lithe, but no trouble for Mirabella to keep up with. It is? It is only strange to hear. You are a very fine orator. No doubt you had plenty of practice spreading the legend these past months. Was there something you wanted, Mirabella? I am very busy, as you can see, walls to fortify, grain to unload, and this afternoon the Queen's mother to burn. But Jules is not yet out of her room. You would burn Madrigal before she is well enough to say a proper goodbye? Amelia stops. She turns and presses Mirabella backward, down into a shadowy corridor, until her back is against the stones, and Amelia's hand is hot on her shoulder. Out with it, then, Amelia snaps. I want to know what your plans are now. Now what? Now that everything is changed, Jules is... unwell. I have not been able to speak to my sister for days because all she has done is concoct more potions and tonics to help her. Yet you tell these people, who risk their lives and have left their homes, that she is unhurt and in mourning? Jules will be fine. She will be our queen. Perhaps once, Mirabella hisses. But you and I both saw what we saw at Innisfool. You cannot put that on the throne. Let us take her away to the mainland. The curse may be eased away from the island. No. Amelia presses a finger to Mirabella's chest. Your sister would never allow it. Arsinoe will do anything that might help. And what of the mist? Since the day the temple took you, they have said that you were for the island, its great protector. Will you leave us to it after what we both saw? But when did the mist start to rise, Amelia? Was it the moment Catarine stepped into the crown? Or was it weeks and weeks later, when you sought to elevate Jules above her station? Amelia bares her teeth, and Mirabella braces for anything. A strike to the head or an unseen blade slipped between her ribs. But in the end, the warrior merely spits on the ground and walks away, and Mirabella lets out her breath. It takes a few moments to collect herself before she can go up to the room they have designated as hers. It was meant to be shared with Arsinoe, but since she returned from the mountain, Arsinoe has not slept there, if she has slept at all. She turns her head at a knock, and Billy pokes his head in.
Have you seen Arsinoe?
She's not with Jules. No. And even when I seek her out, she does not want to see me. Has she? Is she angry with me because of what I let happen to Jules?
Of course not. What happened to Jules was not your fault. She's relieved that you are safe. It'll be better once Jules is better.
He smiles, covering up the words that echo through both of their heads. But we are not leaving any time soon.
Do you need anything?
He asks. No. Thank you. He closes the door, and Mirabella hears a familiar trill come from the window. Pepper! The little woodpecker flies from the stone sill to her shoulder and pokes a bit at her hair. Then he sticks out his leg. Another note has been tied to him, this time labeled with an M in familiar scrawling script. She unrolls it and reads. We have spoken with the Queen, and we too believe she is true. We have departed for Indrid Down. The decision is yours, but we will be here if you need us. B and E. Mirabella takes a deep breath. She strokes the woodpecker's chest feathers. Then she sets the message down, unrolled upon the table. Greavesdrake Manor. Peter lays the stones he took from the Breccia domain onto the floor of Katarine's old bedroom, inside the circle of thin rope he has soaked with his own blood.
The rope looks so fragile, says Katarine, as another stone knocks hollowly against the wood.
It should not matter. That it is joined from end to end is what is important.
He had been soaking and staining it little by little, day by day, until the entire length was crimson and brown, stiff to the touch. He has little more blood to spare, but spare he must when he reopens the rune that Madrigal carved into his palm. Katarine wanders toward the windows. Her hand slips over the back of the sofa and over the desk, all her old childhood things.
Do you think Mirabella is on her way to me? She asks softly.
I do not know, Kat.
Do you think if she comes, Arsinoe might come too? That they might stand behind me, united?
I do not know, Kat.
Peter steps back, surveying his work. He wishes bitterly that Madrigal had not died. He does not know what he is doing. Perhaps she lied to him, and he is not doing anything at all. Katarine cocks her head at his crude circle, the ends of the rope set apart to allow them to step inside.
Is that it?
Seems to be. Do you feel anything?
Katarine rubs her arms and grimaces.
Only for the stones. They do not like them. They do not want them here.
He looks at her, fetching and queenly in black riding breeches, a smart black jacket, ready to do as he instructs.
Do you trust me, Kat?
She looks up at him in surprise.
Of course I do.
Even after,
he says and looks down in shame.
Even after, she says, and smiles.
Her smile, not the dead queen's. They were his doing. He was the one who pushed her down and let them in. But now he will make it right. He holds out his hand and leads her inside the circle. When he joins the ends of the rope, he thinks he feels something ripple through the room, some slight shift in the air. Then it disappears, and he is not sure.
Perhaps he should have chosen another place to perform the ritual. The temple, perhaps, before the goddess stone, or somewhere on the grounds of the Volroy. Sacred spaces. But Madrigal never mentioned any particular place, and Greavesdrake was somewhere private, where they would not be interrupted. The place where they first met. And to Katarine,
the place that still feels the most like home. Greavesdrake has been the seat of Aran power for 100 years. It must be good enough.
Will it hurt, Peter?
She whispers.
I think so.
He shows her the rune cut into his palm.
You are not afraid of that?
She shakes her head, but her eyes are full of fear, even as she keeps her voice resolute.
After that boy by the harbor,
she murmurs.
After Madrigal. We have no choice.
He bends down to kiss her hand and slides a blade from his belt. The first cut is the hardest, seeing her pale skin split and the red run through her fingers. But he works quickly, and she makes not a sound. The room's so quiet that he can hear the first drops strike the floor. With her rune complete, he releases her wrist and turns to his own. Cutting through the scabs burns, and he bites his lip. But though he cuts, not enough blood comes. The strength of his poisoner gift has healed them too well, and he will have to cut deeper.
Peter, Katarine says, I feel strange.
Strange?
He asks, and she falls to her knees.
Katarine!
He falls beside her and holds up her arm. Dark veins stand beneath the skin, and the blood that pours out of her is less red than burgundy.
They are afraid. They do not want to leave me.
Do not listen to them.
He cups her cheek and nearly recoils at the gray rot spreading across her face.
They are only fighting,
he says, but in his mind, he remembers Madrigal's warning.
Surely you must have considered that she may not be alive at all, except for them. She may truly be undead, and the moment she is emptied of the last of the queens, her body will break and shrivel up, just like it would have had they not intervened in the first place. I am with you, Kat. You will be fine.
Katarine screams and doubles over, and he presses his cut rune against hers, locking their hands together. The shock that goes through him sends him onto his back, and one of the breccia stones rolls out of the circle.
Peter, it hurts.
Hold on, Kat.
He grinds his teeth. Her blood splashes darkly onto the stones and her screams fill the room. Another shock passes through him as the queens scratch for purchase inside Katarine, and his leg jerks, sending another stone rolling. He squeezes his eyes shut.
So cold,
Katarine moans.
You do not need them. Hold on.
I can't.
You can.
I won't.
He opens his eyes as she lets go of his hand.
Katarine?
Every bit of exposed skin is gray and mottled black, the dead queens risen to the surface. He pushes himself up onto his elbows as she licks clean the wound in her hand and kicks the stones aside, clacking them together like marbles. Perhaps he did not know enough of low magic. Perhaps it was foolish for him to try. Or perhaps it would not have worked, even if Madrigal had done it herself.
I had to, he whispers, as the dead queens stalk toward him, wearing Katarine's body like a costume. I had to. For her.
You had to,
they say and lift him to his feet. He looks into her eyes, searching, and what he sees makes him want to scream. But it dies in his throat as they press their lips to his, flooding him with black and cold, filling him up with them until his blood has nowhere else to run except straight from his ears and eyes. The Seawatch Mountains. On the side of a road that curves eastward through the mountains, Mirabella raises her arm and flags down a passing coach. Have you room for another passenger? She asks. I have coin enough.
She holds it out in a small purse, and the driver weighs it in her hand before nodding.
You a naturalist?
She asks, gesturing to Mirabella's hood. Mirabella smiles and tucks the woodpecker deeper into her collar.
No, I am only borrowing him.
Aye, get on in then. We're going all the way to the capital, if that suits you.
That suits me fine, she says and opens the door. For I am expected there. To be concluded.
This is Amy Landon. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Two Dark Reigns by Kendari Blake, presented by Harper Teen and Harper Audio. This program was produced by Literati Audio. The director was Dennis Kao. Executive producer Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2018 by Kendari Blake. Production copyright 2018 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.